Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guests today are Mr. Yuck, winner of the 2012 Gross Gene Cup at the Blackjack Ball, and his gambling partner, Charles Hondy. These are players who've succeeded at both table games and at the machines. In today's show, we're going to focus on the table game side. At some later date, they'll be back talking about the machine side. Mr. Yuck and Charles Hondy, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. May I call you Yuck?
You may.
And that's better than Mr.
Either way works.
All right. What is the relationship between you guys? I'm referring to gambling-wise, but you may answer any way you want.
Well, I believe we first met at a green chip party, and then it was shortly after that that we started teaming up and doing plays together, sharing bankroll.
Yeah, we had an event organized through the BJ21 website. And that brought some people together that actually had never met in person, and was a really good way to meet other players and develop relationships and form teams, actually, too.
That doesn't happen anymore, does it?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I think that's... I don't hear of that happening
that
way.
Since the site sold, yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've not been on the site recently.
Yeah. All right. When did each of you start gambling, and how did that go?
Well, I started about 20 or so years ago.
And for the record, that is Yuck who's talking.
Yes, this is Mr. Yuck. So I started about 20 years ago. I had always gone to the casino with the idea of playing with an edge, although I wasn't really successful until maybe 10 years ago where I was making real money at it. When I first started, you know, it was mid-90s, start of the internet, and I read anything and everything I could find, good information and bad information, and kind of came up with a strategy which was both good and bad, and really wasn't making any money at it. I wasn't losing a huge amount, but it wasn't until about 10 years ago that I decided to start betting against my bankroll and proper Kelly betting. And
were those first attempts, were you counting cards, or were you...
It was card counting, but my betting scheme was also related on a progression, which we all know doesn't fly.
Yeah, and I my start was a little bit different. I started gambling as soon as I turned 21, just making, you know, trips to Vegas recreationally and that sort of thing. And I, for years, was just a recreational losing gambler, and... at one point, I decided that, you know, progression systems and voodoo and locking in wins and things like that wasn't really making any money. And I was like, I'm going to have to find a better way to go here. And I started, you know, basically educating myself and reading books and that sort of thing. So, you know, probably, you know, 6-10 years of being a losing gambler. And then in 2000 and maybe... two, I became sharp and noticed a big difference in the way I was treated in the casinos once that happened.
What was the book that did it for each of you? What book was your first that really you used to learn how to play?
Mine was Stanford Wong's book. Was the
Professional
first one.
Blackjack.
Professional Blackjack, yeah.
For me, probably Don Schlesinger's Blackjack Attack.
Oh, Sex, Lies, and Video Poker didn't make the list for either of them.
I actually did read that later on. I do have to. That was on the reading list. Yeah.
All right. We received an email addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com that in many ways is right up your alley. So instead of asking Richard for the first response, I'm going to ask our guest. A reader said, a teammate and I are in an argument about learning Spanish 21. He insists that if we learn Spanish 21, there will be more opportunities because casinos are not inclined to think you can count in Spanish 21. However, I'm based in Washington State, and from what I can gather, all the card rooms and tribal casinos are aware that you can count in Spanish 21 and treat them the same as regular blackjack. Any thoughts to add to this disagreement?
So this is Mr. Yuck. I'll go ahead and comment on that one first. I kind of have a three-part answer to that. First of all, when you learn any new game, you're giving yourself more opportunities. Even if there's just one table of that game that exists in the world, that's one more table that you have the opportunity to play. Certainly, if you're based in Washington State, the casinos up there, some of them, Spanish 21 outnumbers Blackjack 2-1, 3-1, or even more. It's a very popular game in that area. So certainly, in terms of the number of opportunities, you're definitely giving yourself a lot more opportunity on playing options. As far as heat, yeah, the casinos are pretty much aware of Spanish 21, and you should approach it like you would a blackjack game in terms of cover and heat. Another component of that that was not mentioned in the email is variance. Spanish 21 is much higher variance. If I have a 1% edge on a blackjack game and my bankroll says bet $100, on Spanish, I'm probably betting 60 to 75 with the same edge. So you're not going to make as much money for the same risk of ruin.
And you're talking about the double-double version that's in Washington,
right? I'm talking mainly about the double-double-down version that is the one you'd want to play in Washington.
Yeah, and I would agree with everything you said as well. I would say that you could get a little bit longer rope on Spanish 21 than blackjack. But as far as assuming complete, free roll to do whatever you want, that's not going to happen. You just might, cover plays might go a little bit further. If you bet a black chip off the top of the shoe, that might be a little bit more effective than blackjack. But you're not going to have free rein on anything.
Yeah, 10 years ago, you know, you missed the boat by 10 or 15 years when, yes, they would have thought, yeah, nobody can beat that game. But I really agree with this idea about having multiple arrows in your quiver. You have, as you said, it's a skill, and you may, especially if you go out of Washington, you may not get a lot of opportunities to play it. But the game probably will be better in the places where it's not inundated with the game. In Washington, they've seen that movie too many times, but in Iowa, they probably haven't, you know, so...
Yeah, they have.
Well, okay, but you get my point. There are places that they have the game, it's not as popular, so you will get some more rope. So it's a good skill to have.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, Mr. Yuck has the pleasure of being the first back off on Spanish 21 in quite a few jurisdictions. And sometimes the only one, but yeah, that's that's part of his reputation, I guess.
So you figured it out before other people did. How did you do this?
Well, there was one post in the Green Chip archives that listed some counting systems, and it said, you know, when the true counts adjust by this much, this is how much your edge varies. So I just kind of went on faith that that poster knew what they were talking about, practiced up the strategy, practiced the game, went out and started playing it. And when I was playing it, when I first started playing it, it was about 10 years ago. So I did kind of have free rein. You know, if it's at the end of the shoe, I could go table max on one hand. Oh, the count dropped. Table minimum on the next hand. Oh, the count's back up. Table max in the next hand. And for the most part, the casinos really didn't care because they didn't think the game was vulnerable. And I found that I was actually winning more on the game at that point. And I believe it was more because of my aggression and lack of cover than anything else. When the book came out, it was kind of a mixed blessing. It educated other people about the game, namely the casinos.
Are you talking about Katarina?
Yes, I'm talking about Katarina's, Professional's Guide to Spanish 21, Katarina Walker's book. When that book came out, it was kind of, you know, it was an opportunity for me to look at my own analysis and compare my numbers with what she came up with. I did a lot, after reading the Green Chip post, I did a lot of my own number crunching, figured out some indices and win rates and a few other things about the game on my own to enhance my strategy. But I didn't have anything to compare those numbers against, so I wasn't completely confident in my results. So it was kind of nice to have another source to go and check my work. But, you know, that was kind of the beginning of the end as far as the game getting heated up. And what's interesting is I don't think the game got heated up because a whole bunch of people got the book and started reading it and started going out and playing it. I would venture to guess that at least in Washington, what would you say, Charles, about a half a dozen people, maybe?
I think it got heated up by reputation, quite frankly. You know, if you see a certain player playing the game that you kind of know is not dumb, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're appeared to be winning money, and it might not be just luck, and then after that, you know, it just raised awareness level.
And I think the presence of the book caused it as well. There was, you know, in the Wikipedia article for Spanish 21, and it may still be there, the book was kind of promoted, you know, with words like, better than blackjack, this is a great game, everybody should switch to this type of thing. Well, some dealer at some casino in the Seattle area saw that article and reported it, and that was one of the things that's I kind of noticed heat starting to come down at that point. Another thing that happened is Bill Zender read the book and wrote an article about it. So any casino that follows his articles and his networks became aware of the game.
Which don't seem to be many, because he wrote about what Phil Ivey was doing, and that was before they played at the Borgata or in London. So,
yeah, but I do
fortunately, you know, I like Bill, but fortunately, a lot of people read him.
Yeah, I do know of at least one back off that I had that was clearly from that article. It was actually one of Bill Zender's former teammates when he was playing that backed me off.
Oh.
Yeah, and I you know, quite frankly, the article that he wrote doesn't make it, the win rate versus variance look very appealing anyway. If, you know, when I look at the figures he used, I was like, well, this doesn't seem like it would be very appealing to anybody anyway. Why worry about it?
I think there are two really important lessons here. One is, I agree 100% that games get burned out because a known player, the casinos know somebody's a wise guy, and suddenly they see him playing some other game, and they start to go, wait a minute, why is that guy, we know he's not here to gamble. And the other thing is that there's a lot of money in going after the things that other people aren't doing. You found a game that other people weren't playing, so naturally you're going to make a lot of money from it because nobody else knows about it.
Yeah, and I have to give him kudos because Yuck basically, you know, invented his own system, ran numbers on it, created indices and everything before there was any information on it. And quite frankly, I feel that his system is much stronger than what the book was written on anyway.
Yeah, I did not switch to the system in the book, partly because I didn't want to learn a new system, but my system is a little bit stronger than what the book had published in terms of counting systems.
So now that, you know, sort of the cat is out of the bag, have you thought about publishing your own system?
No, when I do analysis, I go for a good enough to go out and make money approach, but not a super accurate, super precise. These numbers have to be
100%.
The level of precision that I would feel comfortable publishing. So I've not really given any consideration to publishing my Spanish 21 information.
Okay. The name Mr. Yuck is unusual. I Googled it and came out with it's a green poison control sticker developed in Pittsburgh to keep children away from hazardous stuff. Why are you going around trying to poison children?
Well, I'm not going around trying to poison children.
No, just the likes of me.
Apparently, a certain teammate thought that I was poisonous to casinos.
Actually, I thought you were poisonous to teammates is mainly what I thought it was, because I got heat just being seen in the parking lot talking to him in places that I was pretty clean, and all of a sudden I start getting comments like, say hi to your friend Yuck for me, you know, stuff like that. I'm like, okay, we are not being seen together again.
But so he already had the name Yuck before he poisoned you. So how did you get the name Yuck?
No, that was actually kind of how I got the name. It wasn't. They decided that I was poisonous, and he needed to stick a Mr. Yuck sticker on me. So it kind of.
All right. Were you playing in Pittsburgh at the time? Never mind. All right. Now.
Well, they exist everywhere.
Growth Gene Cup, blackjack ball. In recent years, Richard and I have had the winners on the air, and. Now, you won in 2012, which was a year or two before we instituted that tradition. So here we are, better late than never. Congratulations for winning the 2012 Growth Gene Cup.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Now, One of the things I remember about the finals is arm wrestling. You're a big guy, but it's not particularly clear how many muscles are in that bigness. You mowed down your competition easily until you came to Anthony Curtis. Anthony, although he's a couple decades older than you, was a high school wrestler and keeps himself in pretty good shape. I would have bet on Anthony against you. What happened?
Well, to be completely honest, I probably would have bet against myself against Anthony Curtis as well. You know, I really don't know what did happen. I do know a few things that, you know, the smaller the angle between your forearm and your upper arm, the better. And I knew that a lot of it was with your wrist and forearm. But, of course, Anthony knew that as well. So I knew a little bit about the technique, but I wasn't expecting to take him down. It felt like it lasted an eternity before he went down. I guess I understand that I actually injured him, which I feel bad about to this day. Yeah. I think he's forgiven me.
Well, given that he had enough champagne that night, maybe it didn't dislocating his elbow or whatever it was. But he was out of commission for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And my understanding is there's permanent damage to his elbow. But I just want to mention there's this month's Cigar Aficionado has an article about the blackjack ball. And apparently that story is in the article. I haven't read it yet, so I actually have it here. I was going to read it, and then we started before I got a chance to. So
I'll have to check that out.
All right. Maybe you should have read it before you started talking about what you and Anthony did. All right. We're going to shift our questions a little bit to Charles, simply because it's our own fault. We've been having a yuck answer, most of them. Now, you guys play a lot of promotions, some of which we haven't spoken about on the air. Now, there was one where there's a baccarat side bet that you played too hard at the wrong casino. What happened there?
Well, it was one of those side bets that gets reinvented every couple of decades. You know, this one was centered upon eights. And, you know, we saw it come out, and we're like, well, okay, let's see what the rules are. And it was basically, you know, if you get a natural eight, you get, you know, so much. If you tie with eight, you get so much. And I was like, well, I guess we'll count eights. And so, you know.
And what a concept.
And hope the other one's a 10, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, just to double-check things, Mr. Yuck went to work and said, yeah, there is no other card worth anything in this thing but eights. And so, played it a little bit, and a few places that, you know, just didn't quite understand what we were trying to do or what I was trying to do. We were playing it separately, and played it at one place, won, you know, a few thousand dollars. It, you know, side bets don't always have the highest limits, but won maybe $3,000 and something like that. And then Mr. Yuck went in later. I didn't really have any heat or anything. I think they even, this was at a particular place where you're not really supposed to buy alcohol for the players, but they bought me a beer and everything else. I thought everything was okay. And then Mr. Yuck went in later. He can maybe tell you what he saw after when he went.
Yeah, so the structure of this game, it really wasn't until towards the end of the shoe that you'd start betting it. So I start putting bets out, and I see him pull this three-ring binder out of the pit, and it's got one page in it with Charles's picture on it. So, and I'm just, like, trying to keep my composure and not laugh out loud at the whole thing. I'll let Charles
Yeah,
continue.
So I guess I just had the distinction of being the one and only player in the four-inch baccarat binder. And one photo of me, and then that was pretty much it. So
you didn't work. You could have matched his accomplishment.
Yeah, I don't remember if I won or I think I lost. And they actually did tell me at the end of my session, yeah, there's this other guy in here a couple weeks ago that was playing kind of like you did. It's like, oh, really? Did he win anything? And of course, they gave me some number that was.
I think they gave you the standard 3 to 4 times multiplier of what the actual win was.
Yeah. I think what was interesting about that is that particular casino, I think they reported it to the game vendor, which then kind of trashed the game at all the casinos in the industry. So that's where the part about playing at the wrong casino comes in.
So yeah. Basically it's Charles's fault.
Partially, although a different casino decided a much more drastic idea and came up with nines. So we got, you know, after the eights were gone, we got to play, you know, nines for a short period of time, which was, you know, fun too.
Any number would be fine.
12.5% better, I guess. All right. So yeah, there's another promotion where they had a modified pay schedule for some certain short periods of time. How did that go down?
That one was, again, one where we actually had a... informant, if you want to call it. But, you know, you have people that you kind of network with, and they'll say, hey, I saw this promotion. Is this worth anything, or what, you know, what's going on here? And they basically were taking part of a pay schedule, and they'll say, okay, for a period of time, you know, whatever it may be, it could be a half an hour, it could be an hour, or whatever, we're going to triple payouts. And we were like, what? We're going to triple payouts? And it's like, do you realize your edge isn't, you know, 70% to begin with? It's, you know, it's much smaller than that. If you're going to trip our payouts, you're not going to do well. I mean, it really wasn't a very well-designed promotion because nobody could lose money at it. I mean, your regular players couldn't lose money. It didn't take a lot to just say, well, I'll bet, and you'll just pay me wrong. And so, you know, we couldn't believe that this was coming out when we first saw it. And so, you know, Yuck and I got together, and I'm like, well, you know, besides my back of the envelope stuff, let's just do a quick computer analysis. And Yuck ran numbers, and I what was the edge you came up with?
Oh, it was somewhere from a 70% to 80% edge.
70% to 80% edge. And we're going, okay, and you can make bets on this thing up to like a couple $100s. And so we were like, wow, we, you know, the day this starts, we gotta hit it. We gotta make sure that we're there. This particular venue didn't open table games until like 10 a.m. or something. And so, and it was on a Monday. And so we're like, okay, we got to get up, make sure we're there, everybody together. And then, of course, the guy that identified the game is like overslept. And we're banging on his door and trying to get him honking the horn and everything else. And we're like, oh, this is going to cost us a ton of money. We might not even get seats. And are you kidding me? I'm like,
why is this guy critical to you getting seats?
Well, we assumed everybody, you know, we just thought, hey, it's like having a...
No, I think he's saying, why pick him up? If he's not ready, just go and let him take an Uber.
Just go, yeah.
Play two squares.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess I felt, you know, a little bit of
Loyalty to him
for bringing it to our attention and everything. I mean,
well, eventually you did leave without him, didn't you?
Well, I left without him, but I didn't. You know, I wanted to come with him and help him get seats locked up and things like that. And so, anyway, we're late getting there, and we're like, oh boy, we'll see how bad this is. And we walk in, and no one's there. And I'm like, apparently we're the only ones in town that can do math.
So how long is this? Is this a 2-hour promotion or a 1-day promotion? Or
it was supposed to last all month.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was supposed to last all month, and
but it was a 2-hour promotion.
Well, they had you know, a big banner out the front, and it's, you know, this somebody had put this giant banner called customized and printed up at the printers and things like that, and had it in front, and supposed to last all month. And we started playing, and the first time I hit one of the payout hands, the dealer's like, oh, good job. And he's like, oh, how much does that pay? He starts adding it up, and he's like, you know, 6,000 something. He's like, this ain't lasting long. And, you know, it's one of those deals where it was like, well, okay, how much do we want to win? This isn't a particularly big place. And, you know, I don't want there to be, you know, hassles cashing me out or things like that.
Or
and,
another binder.
Well, or another binder, you know. Well, that might be worth it, but, you know, as long as it's, you know, it's limited to the binder. But, you know, we were trying to figure out what to do, and then one of the guys is calling Yuck, and Yuck overhears him talking. What did they say? That they're like, trying to get a hold of the casino manager, but he's on the back nine. And no, he's not answering his phone. And, you know, the back nine, we got to play like 2 more hours while he finished the back nine. Before
he got there. That's good.
Yeah. And so, yeah, his golf game was a little bit more costly than his $2 Nassau that he might have been playing for that day. And so we ended up, I was like, all right, I'm up like 25,000 or something. And I'm like, man, I'm worried about it. It's Monday morning. I don't even know if they got new money in there. The cage might run out of money. Then what do we got to do? Ask for checks? I mean, that's happened. And so I'm like, I'm just going to, you know, other people may have pushed it. I decided that was good enough. And I left with 25,000. Another team left with 25,000. And the guy who found the promo, of course, was a little less
lost.
Skilled. But, I don't know. He made less money somehow. Non-surprisingly, ended up, if you know what I mean, he ended up making less money, but he made something, and then we left. And I normally don't feel bad when we win from a casino, but I did feel bad because they tore down this nice banner that, and I thought, man, I kind of feel bad for the guy that put in hours to create this banner and advertising, get it printed up, and they just ripped it down. And I was like, well, that's cost of doing business, I guess.
A trips bet where you're playing blackjack, you're dealt a pair, and the dealer's up card is the same rank. Now, what did this pay, and how did you exploit it?
That one, they just paid you 5-1 on whatever your bet was, up to $500. So you go in and you bet $100 all day long on as many spots as they will let you. And it was comparable to the suited blackjack pays 2-1 promotion. I think the edge was around 2%, somewhere in that ballpark. And,
Was this just some promotion where they decided to pay 5-1 and instead of the... I mean, because this
normally
is
that's not a paying hand.
No, but there is a side bet for the trips. I mean, you've seen this before, but it doesn't pay 5-1.
Yeah, this was completely independent of the side bets that were on the table. This was you could not bet the side bets at all. You just play your blackjack hand as normal, but if you happen to get these trips, they'd pay you the 5-1.
Oh, it wasn't a side bet. It was just on your your original bet. Oh,
yeah, it was on your original bet, and that one was also supposed to last a whole month. We hit it pretty hard. This casino had, I think, I don't know, 5 or 6 locations in the Seattle area. I wasn't the only one to have played. This is actually before I knew Charles when this one came out, so I don't know if he got to play this one or not, but I met up with a couple other guys and we hit it, and I know all their casinos got hit pretty hard that first day. I think day 2 they dropped it to 3-1. And I really don't know if it lasted the whole month or how long it lasted. I only played the first day. I decided that was enough.
Didn't want to bet $167?
No.
All right. Push on 21. Instead of, what was this one?
That was, it's still around. It's a table game side bet called Blackjack Tie.
Correct.
Yeah. And it first came out in a advertisement that it was being put in, and they were... nice enough where they actually put all the payouts and everything, you know, in there. And I'm looking at this, and I'm talking to Mr. Yuck, and I'm like, well, you know, I'm looking at this side bet, and I'm like, what if you just tried to tie? You know, and we said, you know, they design these games assuming the player is going to think one way. But what if the player thinks another way? What if you sacrificed the main bet for the trying to win the side bet? And
like hitting a 19 if you had, so you could be 21.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Let's go ahead and hit 19.
What idiot would do that?
Yeah. Well, what idiot would decline their blackjack and say, give me another card? And so, you know, that's what it was, because you needed 3 cards to make 21. But in the beginning, you got a blackjack. You're like, no, don't pay me. Just hit it. And if you got a face card, now you got 21. Now I'm like, okay, please, deal, tie that, you know, and go from there. If you tie that, then bang, you hit the, you know, the payout. And I forget, a couple 100-1 or whatever it was, but it was worth sacrificing, you know, the main bet to be able to.
Could you bet more on the side bet than on your hand?
Yeah, you could.
Oh, wow.
You could. Or they changed that?
Well,
I think that was a pretty quick countermeasure, though, is that they made it so you had to bet the same.
I I think it started out where you had to bet the same, and then they changed it where you could only bet half. Is that what they did?
I don't know. I thought the very first version I thought was, you know, they start coming up with things as you're winning, and it wouldn't back you off. They just kept changing the game, so you know that was kind of nice too, because they weren't really sure if you were just a complete idiot or not, because you know what, there were,
of course they're sure if you don't take your 3-2 on blackjack, you're an idiot.
Well,
this is clear.
That's true. Well, we started getting regulars to do it, though, you know, and the regulars, that's what kept the game going, is the regulars, unlike the other promotion, the regulars were losing at it because they were, like, just, you know, not really doing exactly what they should do. They're halfway doing it and halfway not. And so I actually think, you know, they could make money on it. It's just that they were getting more action from us than they were from the regulars. And so, you know, that's why it wasn't profitable for them, at least initially.
That's the problem. The regulars bet a lot less than what you want to bet, right?
Yeah, so if the regulars would bet as much as what we were betting, it might have just, you know, might have been actually turning a profit for them, because it was like, if you didn't really know a lot of the nuances of the strategy, then you might not be playing it with an edge.
But you want to bet 100 and they want to bet a nickel.
Yeah, something like that. So they started coming up with different, you know, changes on the pay table. And what was interesting, the first time we played it, we decided, okay, we're going to go and we're going to bring in an Asian guy that we knew, and he was going to be our big player. And he had really no casino experience, which is good, generally. I mean, I'd rather train somebody from scratch than have somebody that's already a degenerate gambler from experience. I kind of know this now. But, you know, we kind of trained him what to do and how to play the game, and then we'll just kind of just sit back and watch what's happening. And so we're like, okay, and just bet red chips, and we'll see how this goes for now. And so we had given him a bankroll for the trip, $5,000, and so he buys in, ends up buying in, I think, like all $5,000, and then asks for red. And they're like, what? And so they're trying, they're negotiating, can you take some black, can you take whatever? And they're trying to figure out what, and then I kind of went around to the other side of the pit, and the guy goes over the phone. I hear him call surveillance, and he's like, I don't know what's up with this guy, but he means business. And so, yeah, he just started to play, and we're shaking our heads going, oh, we didn't even think that he would do that. You know, we never thought that he would go and buy in for all $5,000 and then bet $15. And so I think that falls under their what do they call that? They just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
They can talk about that one as just doesn't look right.
Doesn't pass the smell test. Okay. All APs get backed off from time to time. Any interesting ways that you have to tell us about?
Oh, wow. Where do I start? Well, I'll tell you about one, and I'm sure Charles has a couple at least that he could tell you about. I went into a casino, and I was actually going to meet my parents and my sister for dinner, and I got there early, so I went to a casino on the way and played a little bit. I was doing my normal strategy, a little bit of betting covers, just a straight counting game. And all of a sudden, some big jackpot hit on a pie gal in the other corner of the casino, and I decided that nobody in surveillance or the pit or anywhere was going to be paying any attention to me. So I threw all cover out the window and just started blasting away. And, you know, the half-hour session was over. I needed to get to dinner. I went to the cage. This is also during a shift change, so they were doing shift change stuff. The cage was trying to figure out how to pay this pie gal jackpot, and I could see that I wasn't going to get my chips cashed out anytime soon. So I went to dinner. Then a couple hours later, came back to the casino just to cash out my chips, and I went out the back door of the casino, the parking lot, and a security guy comes out the door and says, "Excuse me, sir, could you please come back in?" And I'm like, I probably don't want to go back in. It's like, no, I'm kind of in a hurry. People are waiting for me. I really need to go. It's like, oh, would you please come back in? And I was like, no, I'm in a hurry. I'm going to be heading on my way. And then his next statement is, well, just don't come back, okay? So he couldn't really make up his mind whether he wanted me in there or not.
Yeah, that was a good one. He should combine that with the sister property that told him, what did they tell you? We think you're barred, but we're not sure for how long. And then what did they tell you to do?
Yeah, so as I was leaving, the security guard says, yeah, I'm supposed to tell you that you're barred, but I'm not sure for how long. So you can come back next Wednesday morning when the general manager's here to find out.
Oh, good. Were you anywhere near there next Wednesday morning at 9 a.m.?
No, but come 2 or 3 years later, when new management started running the place, I got a letter in the mail saying that I'm welcome back.
Oh, here's $5,000 to start with. Greg, yeah.
No, it was more like a $5 match play. But it just, I was like, how many people must they have backed off with that other management to have such a long enough list to warrant inviting everybody back?
I had a back off one time where they came up to the table and said, you two guys can't play anymore. We think you're using a system.
I tell them that all the time. I tell them I gamble until my money's gone and then I go home. My probably most interesting kind of back off story or countermeasure was I was playing a game at a small casino, and they only had one table open of this particular game, and so I played it with another player, BP, disposable BP sort of thing, but I was at the table too, and they were kind of wondering, you know, what was going on, and so they had a couple of, you know, I drink usually for cover a little bit, just to look like a normal gambler. Not a lot, one or two beers, three beers over the course of a night, something like that. And they had served me two beers, and then on the third beer, they came up and said, we can't give you any more alcohol unless I check your ID. And it's the waitress asking me this, and I'm like, all right, I'm pretty sure they put the waitress up to this. So I'm like, okay, I don't need to drink anymore. And so we continued to play, and then
apparently two beers underage is okay.
Yeah, two. Yeah, right. Yeah. The state limit apparently was two underage beers, and then after that, they got a check.
And you look so close to 21.
Yeah,
that,
exactly. So they had tried some things before to get information out of me. I guess they left that out, and then finally, they think they put the waitress up to trying to get my ID on the next beer. So I'm like, well, I'm not falling for that. And so then, they're just uncomfortable, you could tell, because the manager would kept walk up, watch the game, walk away. Not like the pit manager, like a higher up manager. And so finally the dealer's like, well, it's my lunch break and I'm going to go to lunch. I'm going to shut the table down. And I'm thinking, shut the table down for lunch? Okay. So, you know, I guess it made sense that maybe they didn't have anybody. They were short dealers, didn't have anybody to cover this particular game and that sort of thing. And so I was like, okay, we'll figure out
right, because
we're
always shut down the table with the most action on it in the
casino, exactly, right? And I'm like, okay, well, you know, and they even have one of those little signs, you know, be back 2:30 or whatever it was on there. I'm like, all right, you know. And so it's whatever time it was, like 2:45, and then I think it was actually more in the evening, you know, so it was like, you know, 7:45, and it's like, it's okay, it's supposed to be back open. And then, you know, one of the other guys asked, you know, when are they gonna open that back? Like, I don't know, we're trying to work. And I'm like, okay, we got to figure out what's going on here. And I go out to the car and I'm making a phone call, and I look and I see the dealer walking across the parking lot, and I'm like, hey, that's you know, I'm on the phone, I'm like, I think that's the dealer, and he's walking across the parking lot. And the other thing is, this was not a dealer-dependent game. I didn't care who dealt the game. Just that was the guy assigned to the table. But I'm like, what's he doing? He's walking around the parking lot. I don't really care who deals the game. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't dealer-dependent. And he gets in his car and backs out and drives off. He leaves. And came back, and they just avoided questions about ever opening the game again. And so they decided that they would just shut down this game for the entire casino for the rest of the day. Or and sent the dealer home to save money, I guess.
Or for the rest of your stay.
At least they didn't fire him.
That's what I thought. I was like, well, they can't fire him. He didn't do anything. He just, you know.
Well, that doesn't stop them, right?
No, that's true. That's true. So I thought that was interesting. They decided that it would be better to have a closed game. It was a popular game, too. So it was obviously, you know, in theory costing them money, but I guess it was better to just not have an open table than worry about things.
Well, on your way out the door, you could have said you're leaving now so they can open up the game again. Make it useful information.
Yeah, that could have been an interesting strategy, is like pop back in a couple hours and see what happened, but I didn't try it.
All right, we're talking to Charles Hondy and Mr. Yuck. We're going to take a brief break for commercials, and we have more questions for them, so don't go away. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. Throughout June, there's half-price gas and or food promotion. You earn $50 Chevron cards or $50 Smith's cards for $25 worth of points earned and redeemed in June. Usually 8,333 points is worth $25 in cash, but in June it's worth a $50 gift card. Maximum 10 cards per month in any sort of mix between Chevron and Smith's. The next semester of free video poker classes at the South Point will be Wednesdays at noon between August 2nd and October 4th. The complete schedule is posted on bobdancer.com in case you're going to be in Vegas sometime in that interval and might want to attend. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is 10-play Dream Card Poker. Dream Card is a 10-coin per line game where periodically the fifth card you are dealt is a dream card, which automatically turns into the best card available given the first four that are there. It is correct about 99% of the time. Occasionally there have been mistakes, but there's no extra skill necessary to play the game. There's higher variance, but the game with Dream Card always has a higher EV than the game without Dream Card. So if you have a choice between the Dream Card version and you can put up with obnoxious noises, that's the better EV play. You guys have played Dream Card. Do you like the Dream Card?
Actually, I've never come across a situation where that's the game of choice.
Yeah, no, I like the quick quad.
Quick quads I like. All right.
I actually asked the attendant, could you turn the sound off? They'll do that for you.
Uh-huh.
Wish they would do that for machines around me sometimes when people are playing.
So yes, you really get right next to the Wheel of Fortune. That's so many of the really good games are right next to a Wheel of Fortune. Okay. Do you guys play by yourself or mostly as a team? Or mostly with other groups?
Most of the time, we play on a shared bankroll, but we play individually. And sometimes we will work with other people, but our portion of that chop goes to our team bank. We very seldom are actually seen at the same table working together at the same casino at the same time.
Yeah, it's a good way to kind of reduce variance if you need to, that sort of thing, because you are living out of your bankroll too. You know, I guess by definition, all professionals do to some degree or another. And depending on what your resource needs are for other, you know, endeavors, it may be good to not have a losing month or whatever session ever. And so it's a good way to kind of, you know, reduce variance and cover somebody's losses and things like that. I mean, you could have very good games that you can lose for long periods of time on. And that's, you know, how it is when you play games that maybe are, you know, high value but also high variance. And doing team play is a benefit of that. Along with the interaction that we have and the information sharing and the camaraderie that goes along with it. Because if you don't have the camaraderie, it's, you know, it could be not all that fun. Maybe Richard can attest to that too.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've said many times, if I had to play alone, I wouldn't play at all. The best part of the game for me is sitting around with a group of people at the comp dinner or in the hotel room after or whatever, and so I'm a team player.
Yeah, and I do owe a lot. I for years played with a pretty high profile hole carding group, and I learned a ton, and I owe them a lot of gratitude for everything that I learned, because it's just too many things that I ever would have thought of on my own. And when you work together with other people, you kind of create that, you know, synergy of 1 + 1 = 3, and you know, you become much
Definitely.
More effective. So I mean, and in any business, it's just a real lesson in what team building does outside of gambling as well.
And I would say for us, in addition to the benefit of reduced variance, I would say the bigger benefit is it's twice as many people going out and scouting and twice as many people who can potentially analyze games. I can't tell you how many games that I've found where Charles has played it far more than I have. Some of the games that we've talked about, Charles found it, I did the analysis, and we both were able to benefit. So the shared skill set, the combined skill set, I think that's actually a bigger benefit than the shared bankroll and the reduced variance.
Teams have people who fill different roles, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, you need a numbers guy who can analyze games. That's like a key component of any good team. And you need people who are willing to hit the road and pound the pavement and go look for games and be open enough to see something new and not just go, I've never seen that game, and move on. I'm only looking for card counting games. You know what I mean? So, and obviously you have that skill because...
It's a learned skill. I mean, you start seeing what other people have found out and you realize, okay, I'm looking at everything from now on. And you know what? 99% of them may be nothing, but the one thing that you find may be something that no one is, I don't know if exploiting is the word, but no one is taking advantage of it and of a flaw or whether it be a design flaw or just a strategy that somebody hasn't thought of before. And so it really does a lot to open up your mind and use your imagination to kind of, look for opportunities.
How did you decide that you were each the perfect partner? It's getting somebody with a complementary skill set, with a suitable personality, doesn't snore too loud, trustworthy.
That's not a requirement, unfortunately. I've spent a night in a hotel room with Max Rubin sometime. It's not pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Richard's seen the inside of a few bathtubs. let me answer first. First and foremost is trust is the number one thing. And I've learned that, you know, over my period that I became a professional, for a long period of time. And trust is the number one thing. We have lost money to people that we trusted, and it turned out that they weren't trustworthy, and we've had money stolen from us. And I think that's the number one thing, is you have to be comfortable with who you're working with. If you're successful at this, there's a lot of money at stake. There's a lot of money available to people that might not normally have their chance or a chance to get their hands on that sort of money. And it's easy to take $2,000 out of a winning session and when you know you won 10 and say you reported 8 and pocket 2,000, and that's things like that have happened. Other things have happened where you trust somebody who's playing remotely and they do nothing but lose and nothing but lose and nothing but lose, and you're like, is it their skill? Is it just bad luck? Or is there something else going on? And you start getting other data points and you realize, man, this person could be winning. And not only that, telling me, send more money, send more money, send more money. And after going through this, the number one lesson I would want to tell anybody about forming a team, it's not whether you like the person, you know, you need to do that as well, but the trust has to be the pillar of everything. And then, okay, let's see what else we need from there.
Yeah, no, I've gone through exactly the things you're talking about. And, you know, and the thing that's crazy is that the people that have stolen have cost themselves so much money over the long run. They would have made so much more money than what they stole if they had been honest. But, you know, I mean, some people just have that defect in their character. They can't help themselves, you know, they just...
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I was talking to another well-known professional about the same thing that had happened to him, and he was explaining it to me, and I'm thinking to myself, that's how they thought was that, that's what they figured was the optimal way to make money with you, was to take it from you. They figured that was the, that was what, you know, and it really, it's not that, it's just the greed starts taking over. And they start thinking, well, they owe me a little bit more. And the justifications come in like, well, I did this, so I should get extra for this. And rather than discussing it, maybe I'll just take it. I think there's some of that that goes on, too.
Yeah, I agree.
We've had a number of stories in the, over the past couple of years about civil forfeiture, where the police stop drivers and confiscate the money for no legitimate reason. Usually this doesn't happen in Nevada because gambling is a cash game, and as a state policy, the Nevada Highway Patrol doesn't want to give gamblers reasons not to come and gamble here. That said, there was an incident on I-80 near Reno that happened to a player that at least the people in this room know. What do you know about it?
Yeah, so he was actually working for us a little bit. He was on his way from Reno to Wendover, and just outside of Sparks, as you start going up in the mountains, they pulled him over for supposedly tailgating a truck. Whether he was or not, who knows? Probably not. They would have found some other excuse to pull him over. And, you know, he just clammed up and didn't say anything. He kind of handled it the way he should have. They brought the dogs out, got the dog to bark. Of course, there were no drugs in the vehicle, but the dog barked anyways. And they took him in, I believe it was for identity theft, because he had a few players' cards that didn't have his name on them.
Not IDs, just players' cards.
Casino players' cards with other people's names on them. And he didn't, you know, it wasn't a huge amount. I think one might have been his brother. It was mostly family members. One was his sister, I think, with, you know, different last name. But that was their excuse to take him in and book him for the weekend until we could get him bailed out.
Well, it all escalated to that point because they called the DEA in. So there was a DEA agent that came besides just the... Highway Patrol, and when they saw, you know, the bankroll that he had on him, that's when they got all excited, and they couldn't come up with anything reasonable to say that he did. They tried to goad him into things like, you know, I think they found like a hotel key, you know, the little slips that you put your hotel key in, and the cop was telling him, oh, you're putting drugs in there, I know that's where you put your drugs, and what, you know, he's like, what are you talking about? And you know
how much cash was it?
It wasn't a ton, maybe like 15,000.
Yeah, it was low five figures.
I mean, we're in Las, or you know, we're in Nevada. I mean, Las Vegas, Reno, yeah, wherever. What, it's not unheard of for people to have cash. I mean, be poker players, anything.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's why it was kind of unusual for this. But they were just so excited to see what they could do to seize that money that they decided to say that. You must be in some sort of identity theft ring because you have these other players' cards on you. And they came up with, you know, felony identity theft for having cards with people's names to print it on them.
And did the police keep the money?
They tried to, but the case was so weak that it got thrown out before it even was arraigned, and they eventually got the money back. But the lawyer made out pretty good on it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, he made out pretty. I mean, not a bad guy, but it's like, yeah, okay, you know, that's...
No, it's the system that sucks, right? I mean, you end up having to pay a lawyer. Yeah, I mean, he works for his money, but it still sucks that you've done nothing wrong, and there's no... It's a free shot for the police.
There's nothing that's going to happen. No one's going to question why they did that. Yeah. No.
Very good. I'm still surprised it happens in Nevada.
Actually, I've heard about it quite a bit in northern Nevada. You would think that the people in Reno would tell the police to knock it off because it's hurting, it's got to hurt their business in Reno.
Yeah, one mistake that I think the guy did make, cop pulls him over and says, "Where are you going?" And before he climbed up and stopped singing, he says, "Well, I'm heading to Wendover." He's like, "Well, why are you going to Wendover?" "To gamble." It's like, "Well, why can't you just gamble in Reno?" You know, that part of, to the cop, that part of the story didn't line up. So I don't know, how often do people in Reno travel to Wendover to gamble? I don't know if that's a common occurrence or not.
I had a friend stop between here and Mesquite. This apparently is a corridor too. And again, it just makes no sense to me that coming or going to Vegas with cash, but same kind of deal. But so I could see them asking the same question. Why not gamble in, Vegas? But
yeah, a little interesting tidbit I just remembered about that incident. They did arrest him and took him to jail. He had to, he had to spend time in jail, and they put him in, like kind of a solitary confinement sort of thing, like padded cell type thing. And
suicide watch.
Yeah, suicide, whatever. And he's like, "What's going on with this?" And so he didn't, finally
it's better than sharing a cell with Bubba.
Yeah, he was okay with it. I mean, we were all freaking out. We're like, "Oh my God, he's in solitary confinement." And it's like, whatever. And he was like, "I just slept on the floor. No big deal." But, obviously it wasn't a good experience, but it was probably better than being thrown into general population. And then they let him out. He's like, "What's all this about?" And they're like, "Well, it has down here that you don't speak, but you're speaking." And they're like, "I speak. I just said I didn't want to talk about it." So somebody in the report puts down, "Does not talk." What he meant was, "I'm not going to discuss the case or it with you without my lawyer." They put down he doesn't talk. So they throw him into some sort of mentally ill cell or something because they thought he was a mute.
Well, and on top of that, he didn't they didn't have the right address for him, or he wouldn't give him his address, or anyways, the address they were able to look up for him was a Jack in the Box restaurant. So they're like, "Yeah, there's this guy, he lives at a Jack in the Box."
And he doesn't
and he won't talk.
And he won't talk. How can he be? "May I have your order, please?"
Oh yeah, that's our gambling partner.
We were talking a couple minutes ago. I've been to out-of-state casinos and gotten W-2Gs. And so you show your ID. And my ID says Las Vegas as an address. And the floor people not infrequently go, "You live in Vegas and you come here to gamble." And it's always, wherever it is, I always have relatives nearby that I'm visiting, and I just have to be in the casino because I can't stand my brother-in-law. But they always question that. Cannot imagine somebody who lives in Vegas going somewhere else to gamble. So we've been talking to Charles Hondy and Mr. Yuck. They're going to be back in the near future talking about machine play, which is, I'm looking forward to that show because that's more of what I'm interested in. So thank you both for being here. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.